This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello, this is the Saxo Market Call on Monday, the 2nd of August, 2021. And Ole, you and I, we're back from a long vacation, and we're taking over from John Hardy, that has done a splendid job in keeping this podcast alive during from time to time a very quiet summer holiday period. Although there have been some storm on the high seas of financial markets, I would say probably the crackdown, if you will, you're seeing in China on the technology sector, the for-profit education system and the technology stocks there. It's probably one of the biggest stories over the summer months, and it's not over yet. We had over the weekend the SEC, the new director there, the Gensler, is basically ordering now the SEC to block Chinese IPOs for the time being. They want more risk disclosures because what is happening in China with the new regulatory stance is impacting U.S. investors, as the SEC is seeing it. And it's actually causing Chinese technology stocks and Chinese stocks in general to rally this morning, up almost 3%. And that's despite a softer PMIs coming out of China, showing what John has been talking about basically for a month, that China was really in the tailwind of stimulus from the US and Europe, and they're dealing with a lot of leverage in their private sector. They're doing all this crackdowns on the for-profit education system, etc. And that positive sentiment we're seeing in Asia is spilling over into European and US equities as well. We have here on slide 2. The Nasdaq 100 futures up 0.6-0.7% as we speak, pushing towards those highs. And the U.S. 10-year yield is falling this morning as well. So the real yield on the world's most liquid bond market is just getting lower and lower. And that's propping up basically technology stocks. And before I talk so much more, maybe that's a good lead-in for you, Ole, talking about gold with the real yields.
Yeah, thank you for that, Peter. Because I think you mentioned China, clearly one of the major developments while we've been absent, but also I think this continued drop in yields is really a bit of a head scratcher for many. Even though the timing of potential tapering has been brought forward, yields are still coming down. Real yields are now at the lowest level, as far as I can see, on record, at least as long as back we can track data. And that's leading us to the gold chart, because coming in this morning, not having watched markets that closely for the past few weeks, I must obviously, first of all, conclude that this gold performance is really disappointing. We are still stuck at just above the 1800 level. As you can see on the right-hand side here, that's the actual chart. We bounced off that June collapse. We recovered 50% of that, and that is now two times in a row provided resistance just above that 1833 level. And as long as we stay below that, then it will still attract tactical short selling as we approach that 1830 level, and that's probably what also helped drive the market low on Friday. But historically, real yields, falling real yields, been gold positive. But as you can see on this on the left hand side, as real yields has raised lower, it's inverted here on the chart, gold has been doing absolutely nothing, and this dislocation is a head scratcher. Reasons, well, I suppose as long as the stock markets remain well behaved, not least due to collapsing yields, which is basically leaving the market with limited alternatives if they're looking for yields. As long as stock markets remain well behaved and the inflation expectations continue to be very muted, because the break evens has really not done anything this past few weeks, been trading sideways. As long as that remains the case, then the story for gold as a diversifier is really not there. So we are watching a technical trading market, which overall I would say is pretty disappointing. And just finishing off the metal space, silver saw also quite a bit of weakness during this past few weeks. We reached the lowest level against gold since January. It has started to recover from that level. But in order for gold to shine, we need to see silver find some support. And that potentially may come from industrial metals, Well, we also over the weekend saw news that the infrastructure plan in the US potentially is still moving towards some kind of a deal, and that would raise the bar for metal demand. So copper is doing reasonably well this morning, even though we had these weaker data from China, and that is providing some underlying support. But overall, stock in range, and a bit disappointed.
I guess in terms of the copper demand, it's still very much the marginal demand coming into that market is still driven by the electric vehicle adoption, I presume. So that's still a story to watch.
Absolutely. And also we've had the elections in South America, where especially most recently in Peru, where we're still not really quite sure how that's going to impact supply going forward, because they're talking about raising taxes to battle inequality. But at the same time, we're also seeing some amazing results, not surprisingly, from the mining companies. We've seen some already, and this week we've got to see more reporting. I think Glencore is going to come out. They have a very big copper business. And these guys, they're getting the revenues now really to rev up production. The question is obviously if that production can be found, because ore grade has been coming down. So it's not as easy to find new major finds compared to previous decades.
Okay, and before we go to a longer equity spiel, let's just stay in the commodity complex. One of the big news that have recently been hit is this new, again, it's almost like an eternal music record that keeps playing, but this Israel-Iran tensions have escalated, or this oil tanker decline, and it's sending some signals or preparations through the oil market.
Yeah, I think it's sitting more as a worry at the background, because at the foreground we still got the Delta virus, which is once again out of control in several countries. Just basically seeing the impact of the vaccine rollouts and how it's impacting government and countries' ability to withstand this Delta. And unfortunately, the vaccine progress is not that progressed in several places, and that is leading to a renewed rise in COVID cases, and that's creating some renewed worries about the global mobility. So that's the negative side. On the plus side, we got very tight supplies. We've seen stocks at Cushing in the US, as an example, now nearly 30% below the five-year average. So stocks are tight. OPEC Plus is raising production. That is supporting it. But the big question there into the autumn will really be the Delta, and whether it's going to have a lead to some downgrades to the very elevated demand growth expectations that we're currently basing the market price on. But we're stuck here around 75 on Brent. But clearly, the Iran-Israeli situation is one that we need to follow. It was an Israeli-linked oil tanker that was hit by a drone attack last week, and in outside the coast of Oman, and that's really one that we need to keep an eye on as well. But overall, that aside, for now, I think we're stuck in a range. We're looking at these two opposing developments with the Delta and supply.
All right, good stuff, Ole. One of the big stories in equities came overnight with Square. The Jack Dorsey, his second company. So he's the co-founder of Twitter, but he's also a co-founder of Square, and he's leading both companies. And Square is on an arms race against the traditional financial industry, and have Cathie Wood, the founder of ARK Invest, basically saying that she believes that Square will be the new JP Morgan Chase. But hold your horses, that could take a while. But in the meantime, they have done an acquisition for an Australian-based company called Afterpay. Maybe a lot of you have never heard about this company before, but it's really a big one. And I don't know whether it's a pioneer, but it has at least been one of the most successful ones in the buy now, pay later industry. We have a Swedish name here in Europe called Klarna as well, which is also have received a lot of venture capital and expanding rapidly. So basically what Afterpay has been doing is that in the traditional sense, if you had a consumer that wanted to buy now but didn't have the money, they would maybe use an American Express or some other credit card, and they could pay back in 30 days. There would be some interest rate charge on that. And then in a high interest rate environment, obviously that could be quite expensive. And then on top of that, these credit card companies would typically charge maybe somewhere between 1% and 3% for retailers to facilitate that that credit transaction. And what Afterpay have done basically is actually they've created this platform or system where you go directly to the retailer. So what happens is that the retailer basically says to the customer, you can buy it now, but then you'll pay later in 4 installments. So every second week, you pay off a quarter of the amount. If you miss your payments, then there is an interest rate charge. But otherwise, if you keep the if you keep with the schedule, the 4 installments, then it is interest rate free. But since time has a monetary value, you know there is an interest rate there. It's an implied in the time value, but it's not a lot. And the retailer also saves the fees for the credit card company. So it has been a very successful business idea, especially in a low interest rate environment for all participants. And I've put in on slide 3 here the share price of Afterpay. You can see it's almost 100 bagger in 4 years only. Has gone from a market capitalization value in Australian dollars at least above $33 billion. So the acquisition in dollar terms is 29. You can see the revenue, in Australian dollars was 716 million for the period ended in December 2020, and the revenue was up 93%. So it's a very high growth business that Square is buying. What I find interesting is that I think it's most likely the highest ever paid price in terms of takeover value to revenue ever in modern equity history. For this deal size, as you can see also in the financials, it's Afterpay. Out of the 716 million in revenue, they actually generated negative cash flows from operations, equivalent to $435 million. So as you can see, it's not even a profitable business, and they're paying a huge. So this could either be a genius stroke by Dorsey and a very good acquisition, or could potentially be a candidate for the worst acquisition in many decades. We'll see. A quick one on slide 4. We have a lot of the car makers. They are reporting their quarterly figures. We have BMW coming up tomorrow. I'll talk about that in a few seconds. We already have had Tesla. As you know, they increased their profits 10 times. They generated more than $1 billion in net income for the quarter. Volkswagen have also reported record first half earnings. They're raising their profit margin target driven by their luxury end cars. Everyone is talking about the chip shortages, which is still a pain in the ass, basically, sorry, pardon my French, for the car makers. It's really holding back revenues and deliveries there. And there is no easy fix to this, as Elon Musk also said on their conference call or earnings call. It probably looking for a couple of years into the future until this problem is really resolved. The cool thing about what's happening is that the success of Tesla and the recent move by Volkswagen to go all in on battery-driven electric vehicle is that all the other car makers are now beginning to be showing in their segmentation data what they are actually selling. And still a lot of things is missing. I haven't put in on this chart here, the quarterly delivery numbers for battery driven electrical vehicles. I haven't put in Renault because they have this segment called E-Tech, which is also includes their hybrid cars. And we want to focus on the battery electrical vehicles because we think that is the future, which is also basically what Volkswagen has said. And what you can see here is that Volkswagen have ramped up in Q2 their deliveries on electrical vehicles quite substantially. They're catching up to Tesla. We know Tesla had a weaker Q2 in terms of deliveries because they were reorganizing some of their manufacturing. So we do expect Tesla to significantly ramp up their delivery numbers in Q3 and Q4. But Volkswagen, very exciting to see. And I'm really looking forward to see NIO from China, which is their version of Tesla, and then on BMW tomorrow, how they report. It's a good idea that you chime in because I'm talking so much. Sorry for that.
That's all right. Well, we've been listening to John only for the last 3 weeks, but now I think John, Peter's not, it's not a good segue, but just returning briefly to the commodity space, because I think another thing that really has caught our attention the last month has really been all these natural disasters we've seen around the world. We've seen massive flooding in China. We've seen flooding in Europe. We've seen scalding heat in other areas right now in southern Europe. And we had frost briefly, at least, but probably slightly more permanent, also impacting coffee prices in Brazil. But overall, if you look at the agricultural sector, the price the baskets, the food baskets, are not really showing any significant increase so far this month, or during this time. We got grains really grain prices reasonably well behaved, and we have to remember, even though the UN FAO's price index is back to levels that we last saw in 2011, around the time of the Arab Spring, some of the really major important staples for the global, from a security perspective, rice and wheat, and so far, even though they are higher, they are not the ones that has been leading the rally. So yes, we got disasters impacting potentially the outlook, but so far it hasn't really had any major impact on prices, because some of the major regions, especially in the US, seems like they're still doing quite well.
All right. In terms of the calendar, today is really a PMI day. We have a lot of PMIs from Brazil and the US. We have already had one from China, India. So China was softer. We had India coming out significantly better than expected, I think, coming back from their ugly wave of the Delta variant on this pandemic, which is still evolving week by week, unfortunately. Germany, June retail sales came out this morning before this podcast was recorded. Much better than expected. Very positive, of course, on that one as well. And tomorrow we have the RBA cash target rate decision. So we'll be talking about that because that's overnight. And then we have Clarita, which is a voter on the FOMC. He's having a speech on Wednesday, and he's really taking, you know, an opposite view to Powell on the current economic monetary affairs. And you also have Bullard that is leaning a little bit more hawkish over the past couple of days in some of his speeches. Bank of England meeting on Thursday, and then we have the non-farm payrolls and the average hourly earnings on Friday, which is directly linked or key for the inflation story there. We'll try to end this by having a look at the earnings watch calendar. So all the earnings that are on the tap for this week, we have around 200 earnings releases. Today we already have HSBC, much better than expected. They also putting out a new dividend target. We have tomorrow we have Alibaba, obviously super super important given what's taking place in China as we speak. We have BMW, as I mentioned, that's the EV story. We also do have Infineon Technologies. It's the largest semiconductor manufacturer into the car industry. Will all the different sensors, etc. And I haven't highlighted them. I should have. That's going to be interesting as well to see what they say on the semiconductors. To the car industry. Toyota is reporting on Wednesday, Uber as well on Wednesday. SoftBank, interesting in Japan. I've put in, it's not a name we'd normally talk about, but since you mentioned the coffee price has been impacted by frost, temporary frost in Brazil. JDE Peet's, which is trading in the Amsterdam, is one of the big coffee middlemen, I think, in the global coffee industry. Maybe they have something to say on what's going on in coffee. And then on Thursday, that's the big earnings day. We have Square, obviously, we have to focus on that one. We have Novo Nordisk, we have Moderna, I should have highlighted Moderna. We have Adidas as well, I should have highlighted that. Zalando is reporting. And then Glencore, as Ole mentioned, a very big name in the physical commodity market, especially within copper, as we mentioned. But so we'll see what they say. And then we have Maersk reporting on Friday, the world's biggest shipping company. The global supply chains are still very much disrupted. There's so much disruption going on. It's unbelievable. And Maersk is just having a field day. They're making a ton of money from all this chaos. And it will be very interesting to see what they say about what's going on in the global shipping industry. And then, the weekend on Saturday, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger will report earnings from their sprawling conglomerate of industries all over the place. That's Berkshire Hathaway right there. That was a long one, but we are back in business, Ole. I think it concludes today's podcast. So,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, it does. So I'll just say thank you for listening, and we'll be back same time and place tomorrow.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.